He's got that.
I want to welcome the new people. I've been gone several weeks. I don't know if you're happy or sad that I'm back. I know it went well because we've had people coming to the meetings for quite a while who are doing the deal, and I knew, I didn't even worry, I knew that they'd find it and it'd be good. I have a couple more days that I'll be gone, but other than that, I really don't have any plans for months, so I'm usually here all the time, but I took this vacation and it was good till we decided to come home from Lisbon. And I didn't realize when I woke up that morning that this was going to be a 10th step day. And it was to test me. And that since I'm the center of the universe, everything that happened that day only happened to me. Does everybody understand that?
Absolutely.
So we were supposed to be home at 7:30 or 8 o'clock Topeka time, which would have been 2 or 3 in the morning Lisbon time, a long day. We fly into Dulles. We get the bags, and the connecting flight's been canceled. Now, you understand they canceled it just to ruin my day. You understand? I was the only one on the airport or on the plane. But I was pretty calm. I said, well, you know, what can you do? And then we get to the service, and they put us on a plane from Houston to get to Kansas City. The boarding time for the Kansas City flight was the landing time of the Houston flight. I said, this doesn't sound good. She says, it's a legal connection. I said, well, you know, and we were tired because when you've been, you have terrible jet lag. So we got on the plane. The plane's late taking off. We get to Houston and we land. And he says, the good news is we've landed, but all the gates are full. Well, they'd had thunderstorms in all of Texas and none of the planes had gotten in or out. There were no crews. So we're sitting on the tarmac for an hour and 15 minutes when it occurred to me that they had planned this just for me, just to test my spiritual journey. I said, God, could we have made it just 30 minutes on the tarmac? And so anyway, we get there and then we're waiting to board this flight at 10 o'clock. There are 180 people there. And they tell us it's canceled because the pilots are tired or something. So 180 people are running to the customer service where there are already 200 people because all the flights had been canceled. So I tried to get a hotel room. I'm calling. It's like 4 in the morning of the time I'm on. The Ramada says they have a room. Do I want to get their credit card or whatever? No, just give me the room. And blah, blah, we have a room. She's going to email the reservation. She tells me where it is. In the meantime, we got a thing that we're in the 8 o'clock flight the next night. So we get to we had to find a cab. It's a mess. Houston Airport's a mess, and it had basically shut down. So we get to the Ramada, and there are 50 people in the lobby. I said, this is not a good sign. And we get in there, and she's yelling, the one person there, anybody made a reservation the last hour? It's not good. The cabin left. I'm sitting on a bench in Houston. It's 11:30 at night, 5 in the morning of the time I'm on. And you try to dial and get an air hotel, and you keep getting these connections. And, you know, I felt like the night when I was completely, the afternoon was completely defeated from my alcoholism. So Patty and I didn't know what we were going to do. And I said, God, just help me. We'll get through this. And guess what? There was another couple standing right there. And they had just called and gotten a room at the Hilton someplace. And they had another room. And they said, we have a Uber coming. Do you want to share it? Tell me that's not a God thing.
Amen.
So I called the lady just to make sure, because I'm an alcoholic. And she says, my name's Lori. Yes, we have a room. I said, do you have a room? You know, I asked her 3 times. And I had to write my name down. Yes, we have a room. And I got there, we had a room. It was quite an experience. Then we finally got home last night. So if I sound very discombobulated, it's nothing worse than usual, probably. So anyway, tonight we're doing Doctor's Opinion. We're starting the big book for the 10th time. For the new people, we go through the book. And we're going to plow through I think this is the 11th time on Sunday night through the book. Join us Wednesday at 7:30. We're starting step 3 That's where we are on Wednesday nights. We're on page 60, and that's great stuff. On Saturday, we finished steps 6 and 7. We spent several weeks on it, and it was good, right? Yes, good. And we're starting step 8. So if you're interested in studying the book, that's what we do. It's seminar style. We go through the book. The doctor's opinion was written in 1938 by Dr. Silkworth. He didn't sign it in the original book. It says blank MD. He signed it in the 1955 because the things that we're going to read about tonight had become accepted about alcoholism. A couple things. I've been doing this meeting a long time. I've studied the big book. I've been studying the scriptures passionately for the last year and a half, for almost 2 years. I was on the ship and I listened to a lot of Sandy B and a lot of stuff teaching. And I heard Sandy B talk, and then I listened to this man talk about 2 Corinthians 5:2-5. And it occurred to me for the first time, I'm not that smart, exactly what the Old Testament, New Testament, and the big book is all about. And I realized that the Old Testament, at least to me, I'm just telling you my way I see it, is about alienation from God, a world, a human race alienated from God, and how that works, and how God makes promises to the human race that there will be reconciliation with him, and we're separated. And how'd that work? Well, you read the Old Testament. And then the New Testament is about the reconciliation, from alienation to be reconciled to God, and how that happens. And it became clear to me that's exactly what the big book is about. We are alienated from our Creator, and how did that work for you? And then we can be reconciled to our Creator through the spiritual exercises of the 12 steps. And that's all we're really trying to do, is go where we were lost when we come in here. Now, when I meet new people, I ask them what's wrong with them. They tell me they're alcoholic or addict, whatever that is. And I ask them what's wrong, and they give me a lot of answers. But I find that most people don't really understand what it means to be an alcoholic and what their problem is. And I was like that for probably several years. And the doctor's opinion is describing how he sees alcoholics through a medical viewpoint of how we look and what our problems are. And I realized that he's going to talk about the physical and mental problems we have as a manifestation of our spiritual problem, our alienation. And the result of my alienation from God is my alcoholism. I drank. I wanted to change the way I felt. And because it changed the way I felt, my mind was obsessed with keeping doing it, right? And I had no power to stop. And what's the result when I'm reconciled? They're the 9-step promises. Anybody heard them in the meeting? Well, that's all the way the world looks when you're connected to God, because the next 2 lines in the big book says you've entered the world of the Spirit. You're now reconciled with God. How does the world look? A lot better. Now, step 10 is how you stay reconciled to God all day long. And like Paul texted me today, even when you get the wrong lawnmower, right there. And so it's a constant struggle from alienation to reconciliation. And so he says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the reader will be interested in the medical, everybody know where it is, XXV, in the plan of recovery described in this book. Well, that's why we study it, because it has a plan of recovery. Now, do you have a plan of recovery besides the one in this book? If you do, do it. Tell us how it works. And I think one of the reasons people don't make it is they still have a plan. They have this plan of recovery, but they've modified it a little. You know, they put a little modifications. And Joe and Charlie make the point that if I want the cake that they made, I better use the recipe and do it exactly like they did. And if I change it and I do my recipe, I'm not going to have their cake. And I had to learn that the hard way by things weren't doing well for me sober till I did this. And I got my, and I followed their plan. It says, and then it's the plan of recovery from what? So I wrote, it says a plan of recovery, but from what are we recovering? Well, we're recovering from being alienated from God. And we're being, remember it says on page 25, the solution, the great fact is that we have a relationship with our Creator that has changed our lives and the way we see things. And it says, convincing testimony must surely come. And I wrote, what is the convincing testimony that we have in AA? Several. One is the book. This is a testimony. This is a testament of what they did. Now, you may not like it. You may not agree with it. They don't care, because this is what their testimony. And then we hear testimony at our meetings from people who've changed at birthdays. That's what we're supposed to do, briefly, of course. And it says, must surely come from medical men who have had experience for the sufferings of our members and have witnessed our return to health. So they found the medical man, and this doctor, and of course he took care of Bill W., and we owe everything to Dr. Silkworth and Dr. Young. Now, the other thing where it says convinced, it says that on page 60 after the ABCs, it says, if you are not convinced, please throw the book away or reread it. Now, that was in the original manuscript. They deleted that. They thought it was a little too much. But that if you're not convinced by the time you get to page 60 that, one, you're an alcoholic, you can't manage your own lives, you can't fix it, and God can and will if you saw it. If you're not convinced of that, you're not going to do the rest of the steps. And so we're going to read Wednesday night. It says we have to be convinced that our life run on self-will cannot work. Why? We're not going to like the God idea, and we're not going to like the decision in step three and doing the steps if we're not convinced of that. Now, how do you know you're convinced that your life run on self-will cannot work? You're working the steps. You're working with a sponsor. You're studying the book. You're doing spiritual work. You're praying. You're meditating. You're inventorying. So he says, a well-known doctor gave Alcoholics Anonymous this letter. So this is a letter from Dr. Silkworth, to whom it may concern. I have specialized in the treatment of alcoholism for many years. Wow, that's a specialty. And this was in the 30s. And remember, he was a neurologist who lost all of his money in the stock market in 1929. So he got a job at Towns Hospital, which was a hospital in Brooklyn for alcoholism. And he attended a patient, this is 1934, so he'd been doing it several years, who was actually Bill W., and Bill's story follows. And he had been a competent businessman of good earning capacity, but of course that ended, remember, and he had years of just living off of his wife and dying from alcoholism, was an alcoholic of a type I'd come to regard as hopeless. Wow. So what is a hopeless alcoholic? And here's another thing, I had this insight that a hopeless alcoholic is an alcoholic who can only recover through a spiritual experience. And it says that on page 44, if we could turn to that real quick, because this is powerful stuff. And I don't think we understand this enough. People go to, we have treatments, we have a treatment centers, we have treatment programs. They're treating something, but what is the treatment that you have to recover from alcoholism? So it says in the first chapter, in the first paragraph, if you honestly want to, you cannot quit, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. And we're going to talk about that in doctor's opinion. If that be the case, you're suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Now think about that. You're new to AA, you've been in a while, and things aren't going well. Well, what are you doing to get that spiritual experience, and how do you get it? Well, the next paragraph says, if you're an atheist or agnostic, this experience seems impossible, but to continue means disaster, right? Anybody agree with that? Especially if you're an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. Because if you're an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, you're either doomed to an alcoholic death or you're going to live on a spiritual basis. And it's not easy alternatives to face. And so we have to have a spiritual experience to conquer a spiritual disease. And how are you going to get that? And I think sometimes if you're new, you go to fellowship meetings, you'll hear a lot of information about things to do. But what they're telling you, and they're starting this book, and they're going to tell you the problem, if you want to recover from alcoholism, you need a spiritual experience, and they give you a plan to get that. And everything else is good, but unless you do this plan, I don't know if you're going to get it. Now, AA says, if your plan hasn't worked, anybody ever been in that situation, and you don't know what to do, try this. Just the way they wrote it, and tell us what happened. And there are people in this room who've done that and can tell you. That's why I feel so strongly about it. I'm a little passionate about it, because I know that this was work for me. And I know it'll work for you. And we've just read it tonight. Rarely have we seen a person fail who's not thoroughly followed the path. Well, what is the path? The path is written in this book. This is a book of testimony of what they did. And they tell you, if you do what we did, tell us what happens to you. Isn't that what step 12 is? Having had a spiritual experience as what? The result of the steps. So do the steps, tell us the result. And that's and then your testimony will be your experience. Now, if you haven't done that and you don't have the spiritual experience, then you won't be able to tell us. And it says, in the course of his third treatment, he acquired certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery. As part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics. Isn't that what we're trying to do? Impressing upon them, they must do likewise with still others. See, this is how God brought the message to us here today. It started with these people in 1935 on how to be reconciled to him and a plan that they had no idea of. It says, this has become the basis of a rapidly growing fellowship of these men and families. This man, over 100, appear to have recovered. And we don't talk about that enough. Have you recovered? And I've heard people say, well, I'm recovered, or I'm recovering. I think recovered is very simple. Have you been dominated by the obsession to drink today? Have you been fighting the obsession to drink all day long? Are you thinking about it all the time? If you aren't, and when you think about it, you say, bad idea, you're in a state of recovered, which is fragile. And so recovered means you're not dominated by having the drinker used today. And if you aren't, and you continue to do the things in here, you won't. Now, a lot of people come in and they're new and they feel good and they're able not to drink or use for a while, because things get better. But if you're not recovered, there'll be the day when that idea will come in your head and you'll say, that's not so bad. I've been sober 60 days. I can recover any time. I know how to do it, this and that. We've seen hundreds and hundreds of cases of that. So if you want to recover, if you're interested, read page 84 and 85 tonight in the 10th step, and it tells you the recovered promises, how the world looks. And he says, these facts to be of extreme medical importance because of the extraordinary possibilities of rapid growth inherited in this group. Was he right when he wrote this in 1937 or 8? How many people are in this room? There are more people in this room today than were sober when the book was printed. Probably. And yet, it's worked, hasn't it? Has it worked for anybody in the room? Yes. We are miracles. We are all miracles, and we can't take credit for it. It's all a gift from God. These men may have a remedy for thousands of such situations. He had no idea what was going to happen. Now, here's an important line in the book. You may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves. He's telling you on their testimony, on this book, you can rely on what they put in here. Now, you may not believe that, right? But I believe it. You know why? Because it's happened to me. Anybody else here it's happened to? Right? And so that's why if you're new, we're telling you, this works. It says, the physician who at our request gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which followed. In this statement, he confirms what we have suffered alcoholic torture. Anybody have alcoholic torture? Now, it doesn't say you suffer from too much drinking. It says alcoholic torture. And I thought about it. And, you know, you see torture like on these shows. And, you know, it's pretty bad. It looks bad, but it's not happening to you, right? And so, you know, I remember like I thought about, what is alcoholic torture? And I thought, well, you know, they waterboard these people. They pour water over them and they put this cloth and they feel like they're drowning. And they finally take the cloth up and they're able to breathe. And I said, you know, they would never do that again, voluntarily. But yet we do it. We get waterboarded. We get out of it. We're able to breathe. And then we say, well, that wasn't that bad, right? or we forget how bad it was. And then we do it, and we get waterboarded again. We said, shit, how'd that happen? And we keep doing it and doing it. It's self-imposed, like Norm said. We keep doing it, and then we said, how'd that happen? And so it is torture. It was torture for me. And he says, we must believe the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. Now, I've read and taught on this many times, the next few lines, and I finally figured out what they're trying to say. It says it did not, because it's written in an old style, it does not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking. Now, anybody here able to control how much they drink? No? Yeah, there you go. Anybody here can take just one drink? Probably could do it for one time, but you'll drink the next day, I guarantee. Now, I saw something on the cruise. It was all-inclusive. You could drink all you wanted. And I saw something that's very interesting. I hadn't seen it before, although I've been on a lot of these. They bring out the two wines, and they show everybody the two wines, and you're able to pick, and they're telling you how good it is, and this and that. And then the people study it, and they'll say, well, they'll give you a sip, and they sip it. Now, did anybody here ever not drink something because they didn't like the taste, or they're going to ask if the wine's any good? You know, it's a different world. It's just a different world than we live in. And they'll go, oh, the wines aren't very good here. And, you know, that's something we don't discuss at the meetings, do we? You know, did you drink good booze or bad booze and this and that? So anyway, it was very strange. I'd never noticed it before, but, you know, who gives a shit? Give me the drink. Leave the bottles. They take the bottles away. That's very interesting. They take them away. What are you doing with that bottle? Anyway. But it says we could not control our drinking. And here's why people told alcoholics when the book was written why they could not control their drinking. And this is why this information we're going to hear is so valuable tonight. They were maladjusted to life. Were we maladjusted to life? Yes. We were in full flight from reality. Is that true? Absolutely. And were we outright mental defectives? Yes. But that's not why we couldn't control our drinking. See, they wanted me to stop drinking because of these reasons. But that's not why I couldn't control it. You see, I can't control it because my body was sickened as well as my mind. You understand what I'm saying? We can be mental defectives. We could be maladjusted, like we be full flight from reality. And there are a lot of people like that in the world. But they can control how much they drink. Why couldn't we control how much we drink when it goes in our body? And he's going to tell us, he says, because we have an allergy to alcohol. We're allergic to alcohol. Isn't that a son of a... You can drink tons of it and you're allergic to it. How does that happen? It's not like shrimp allergy where you eat a shrimp and you go into shock. That's an allergy, but we have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. What is it? What does that mean? Does anybody in this room have an abnormal reaction to alcohol? Yes. It means once you put alcohol in your body, you will crave a second drink. Anybody have that happen to them? Mm-hmm. Now, normal people do not have that. They let the bottle go away. We know we're going to need the bottle. Has anybody thought about drinking sober? Of course, we all have. And when it ever occurs to me, not often, I said, do they have enough? Does anybody else understand that? Mm-hmm. You know, do they have enough? Because years ago they asked me why I didn't have the little toast. They said, well, surely you could have a little toast. I said, well, I don't know if there's enough booze. And they moved their chairs away. You know. They look at you pretty weird. Well, you know, I am strange. But you see, and before he wrote this, no one understood why they couldn't just have one drink. And he says, it explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account, because I think there were times when we thought we're only going to have one or two drinks, right? Mm-hmm. And we convinced ourselves of that. And then, of course, that never worked, right? John's laughing, he knows. And it says, and I'll quit in a minute, though we work our solution on a spiritual as well as an altruistic plane, we favor hospitalization for the alcoholic who is jittery or befogged. It is imperative that a man's brain be cleared before his approach. Remember, they put him in the hospital, and they gave him a day, and then they came the next day, and they talked to him. It gives you a better chance of understanding except we have the offer. Now, what do we have to offer? That's a good question. What do we offer in AA? We offer a kit of spiritual tools, which is designed to reconcile you with your Creator and get your Creator's power running your life and not yours. Now, the other thing about alienation is when I'm alienated from God, I'm running on Michael's power. Now, that may work good some days not, but did anybody, when they get here, have a life that was a mess? And we didn't have a power to fix it, didn't we? So when I read How It Works, it's how we find the power to live. And all we do when we're reconciled is we're not dependent on my power anymore. And we have another power available to us. It's not a complicated thing. So I'm just going to read this next line and shut up. It says, the subject presented in this book seems to me of paramount importance to those afflicted with alcoholic addiction. Oh my God, addiction's in the big book. Oh my God, don't let anybody hear about that. Because I was at a meeting where somebody said there was an addict years ago, and some lady got up and said, this is going to ruin my sobriety because it's a closed meeting, and she carried on. And, you know, we don't do that as much anymore because there are very few pure alcoholics anymore, quote. But what does it mean when it says you're an alcoholic addiction? See, addiction is confusing. We're all addicted to something that changes the way we feel. It could be anything. Gambling, sex, eating, cocaine, Jack Daniels. If it changes the way we feel and you have a spiritual illness and you're alienated from God and it fixes that alienation, you're going to abuse it. Guaranteed. And so it's not the substance or the activity that's dangerous. It's the mental state that precedes it as the result of being separated from God. Am I making any sense? Absolutely. And so we're all addicts. And then the other thing that occurred to me is everybody in the world has a spiritual malady. And, you know, that's pretty clear if you read Romans 1:3 and if you read the Old Testament. We're all spiritually ill. The problem is that we're an extreme example of it. And not only are we an extreme example of it, but when we don't feel well as a result of it, our mind tells us to get a drink. And then we're screwed because we have an allergy to alcohol. You get the picture? And this makes us hopeless. But there is hope because we're here tonight. So how can you go from a hopeless condition and have hope? Because the hope is through this book and the program of recovery. And the hope is through God. God's there for us as long as we seek Him. God can and will if we're sought. So I hope I haven't gone off the deep end too much. I'm kind of still has jet lag, but I hope it's helpful. And so we're going to stop here. We'll pick up, make sure I don't review Jimmy, on XXVII. Okay, guys? Thank you.